Welcome to the Right Take Podcast, news, ideas, and conversations at the intersection of politics and culture, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I will be your host, Mark Tapson. Greetings and welcome back to the Right Take Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Tapson. 20 years ago, the late, great David Horowitz wrote a seminal book called Unholy Alliance, Radical Islam and the American Left, about the deep spiritual and ideological kinship between leftists and jihadists, and about how, despite their superficial differences, these two camps actually have a great deal more that unites them than divides them. Both are totalitarian forces, both demand absolute adherence from their respective believers, and both are enamored of bloodlust, destruction, and death. That was 20 years ago, and not that long after the 9/11 attacks, which temporarily woke America up to the Islamic threat. But even then, the far left was blaming America, just like today, for the attacks, and sympathizing with the Muslim other, whom we in the West had supposedly oppressed and driven to these acts of resistance against us. Today, the radical left, which now controls the Democrat Party, still works with radical Muslims to undermine American sovereignty, power, and liberty. To cite just one jaw-dropping example, 25 years after 9/11, who is the mayor of New York City? An openly Muslim communist. Today on the Right Take, my guest is a man whose own family fled from Soviet tyranny to America, and he himself is a longtime warrior for America and the West. He has a new book which describes how the ideological soulmates of this red-green alliance, the marriage made in hell of the left and Islam, are bound by a shared hatred of Western civilization, Judeo-Christian values, capitalism, and individual liberty. Both lust for the destruction of every facet of the existing order to pave the way for their respective utopian fantasies, one a social justice paradise, the other a global caliphate under Sharia law. We're going to talk about his work, about our existential enemies, who are not clamoring at the gates anymore, but are already inside them, and gathering momentum in their aim to fundamentally transform America as we know it. And we're going to talk about what we can do to prevent that. Do not miss this conversation. Stay tuned, and don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take, if you don't already, so that you don't miss any of the compelling conversations we're having here. Don't touch that dial. My guest today at the intersection of politics and culture happens to be a friend and a colleague of mine. He's been the editor of the David Horowitz Freedom Center's flagship website, frontpagemag.com, for over 20 years. He's also the host of the popular online TV show The Glazov Gang and the author of, among other books, Jihadist Psychopath and Barack Obama's True Legacy, and more recently, a revised and updated edition of United in Hate, The Left's Romance with Tyranny, Terror, and Hamas. Jamie Glazov, welcome to the Right Take Podcast.
Mark, so great to be here. I'm very grateful to be on.
I'm glad to have you. How many years have you been editing Front Page Mag?
Is it lost in the mists of time? It's a painful question, not because I don't love working for Front Page. I'm just a little bit worried and disturbed at the fleetingness of time.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I don't like this aging process. Mark, I think it's been a good 25 years, right around 9/11-ish.
Wow.
Because I was writing, columns around those years, but there was somewhere in right after 9/11 where I got an email from David, and it was just a quick question. What is your day job?
I was going to ask you about that, about David, how you attracted David's attention and ended up editing Front Page Mag, because I think it's an interesting story.
Oh, it is quite a story, actually, Mark. Thank you for asking that. It's a little strange, you're tapping into something here in my life that it's interesting how life works out sometimes, Mark, because I was in academia. And for a few reasons, I didn't want to return to academia after I got my PhD. To be honest, I'd rather hang around with derelicts on the street than be in an academic environment. I just felt poisoned every day coming back from that environment, just in terms of the leftism there. Mm-hmm. And so I was a waiter And I was very happy being a waiter just for a certain period of time. And I was bartending and waitering. And some of my close friends and family were very perplexed because I had had some opportunities that I could have pursued to be an academic.
Yeah.
And I would just rather even talk to people that were at the bar while I was serving them drinks than be of that environment. But anyway, I'll try to make this really quick. One of the places where I was waitering, we had become kind of good friends with the waitresses, waiters, and some of them, it's a left-wing environment, but some of them had kind of grown to me. I was a little bit of a new, fresh voice for them, and they were a little bit hypnotized by my conservative views, by the things I was saying. And we had had a few drinks after a shift one night, and I was mocking and imitating the leftist mindset. And one of the waiters, and I owe him my life in a way, and he was drunk, and I was getting there, and he said, "Jamie, you need to write a script on how to be a great leftist." And when I came home that day, that night, and I woke up, and he had given me an idea, and I started writing something, Mark. And I wrote this script, and it was called, and I called it 15 Tips on How to Be a Good Leftist. And I was doing some research during that time to kind of polish my thinking on the left. And this book came out at the time called Radical Son by this individual called David Horowitz. I went and got it just to sharpen the way that I think. I was so moved by the book that I decided to write David a letter. And when I was writing him a letter to send to the publishing company, I had actually printed my script up, but it was a bit of a coincidence. And I thought, you know what, let me put this script into the envelope and just tell them what I'm doing. And I sent it, but I just, you know, on the letter, I said, hey, thank you so much and blah, blah, blah. I think you're a great man. Thank you for this message. By the way, here's just something that I'm writing. And 3 weeks later, Mark, I got a phone call. And he said, "Hey, this is David Horowitz. Hey, I'd really like to publish this." And then I became a columnist, and it just went from there. Sorry for the long story.
No,
but when I think back at my life, I just think, this is really weird. Because what if I, you see what I mean? What if I wasn't a waiter? And what if I didn't like to drink beer with my colleagues at the bar afterwards? It's crazy how life works out.
Well, your background is a very interesting story, too. Tell us about your parents and how they laid the groundwork for your life's work.
Well, thank you, Mark. That's, that's very, very a tender spot of my heart and is everything to me, is everything to me. And sometimes I think that maybe I'm being a bit brave doing something, and I think, wow, if only I could have been so brave. And I don't even know if I would be as brave as Dad and Mom. And they were citizens of the Soviet Union, which Ronald Reagan described very perfectly in one sentence. He had summarized Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago in one sentence, in a few words, the evil empire. And my dad talks about and talked about how he knew he was born into a slave camp from the moment he was a kid. And my dad made plans on, he was always looking at maps, trying to figure out what body of water to swim across or how he could escape. He was plotting his escape his whole life. But while he was plotting his escape, he began to stand up for freedom, for political prisoners. He was also a Christian, and he began to stand up against the Soviet regime. And that's immediate invitation to the Gulag. And this is a very long story, but he married my mom, and my mom also became part of this movement. And they were just two very brave people who stood up for political prisoners against the invasions at that time of Czechoslovakia and other things, publishing underground samizdat literature, all kinds of stuff. And also my dad and mom dared to be Christians and to teach us about Jesus, which also can get you hung in many respects. To make a long story short, thank you so much for asking that. We'll have to save that story for another time as well. But the short version is we were able to escape that hellhole and we were very fortunate. But I'm the child of those heroes that grew up in America, loving the United States, cherishing America, this beautiful experiment, the most beautiful experiment of freedom and prosperity in the world. And as I was growing up here and how much I loved America, there were these species of people who would approach me and my parents and tell us that we're very unfortunate that we left the greatest place on earth and now we're in the worst place on earth. And these people were called leftists. I hated their guts since the time I was a little kid, and I dedicated my life to understanding how they think, why they worship at the altar of demons.
Yeah.
And I dedicate my life to fighting them. And I think now is more than ever.
Yeah.
We see them sobbing when a mullah gets killed. So it's more relevant than ever, this whole narrative.
Yes, that's actually the point I was going to make about your book, United in Hate. But before I get to that, I want to make sure that I alert what few people who don't already know about the Glazov gang need to know. And tell us about the Glazov gang. What goes on there and how long has that been running?
You know, I love all these questions. Thank you, Mark. Well, I'll say this, that in the context of everything that we just talked about and that I was saying, one of my greatest frustrations was watching the news, quote unquote. And I was always thinking, how come they're not saying this? How come he didn't ask this? How come they don't invite this person?
Yeah.
Hey, how come they don't invite that person? How come they didn't ask that? Then I said, you know what? I'm going to do that myself. It took me a long time to realize this dream, but I came to LA, and then after 2010, I started putting a couple things together, and this angel came into my life. Her name is Annie Cyrus.
Yep.
And we put this together in 2011, approximately. And it's a web TV show, and it brings me so much fulfillment, and it's a vehicle for me too in terms of my activism and what I believe, because I love to bring on the voices that tell the truth.
Yeah.
And I love to bring on the voices. You know, look, even though Fox News is great on many levels, there's a lot of great people there, Mark Levin, you know, Hannity, Jesse Waters, Judge Jeanine. Of course, there's a lot of great people there. But yeah, we know very well that, unfortunately, that particular place has a little bit of a blacklist and mm-hmm. has a little bit of spaces that they can't say certain things. If you say Islam, you have to say radical in front of the word. And you know, you might invite somebody that talks about radical Islam, but Robert Spencer, who might talk about the verses in the Quran that inspire and sanction jihad, I haven't seen him on there for a very long time.
Yeah.
So the Glazov gang wants to bring on people that tell the truth about the world, but especially the left, and why it aids and abets our enemies. And Mark, you can just imagine, we've had trouble at YouTube and other places as well. So this censorship has come to social media as well. But Rumble gives us a little bit of freeway. And thank God we can post this at Front Page and Jihad Watch.
Yes, well, it's a great show.
Oh, thank you.
And yeah, it's everybody, I encourage everybody to check it out. Now let's talk about your book, United in Hate. Now, that it first came out in 2009, but it's been revised and updated. And sadly, as we both talked about a moment ago, it seems more urgent and relevant now than ever before.
Yes. Well, thanks, Mark. And so as I was living on the planet and growing in this world, I always saw the left, you know, especially in the academic setting. Oh, Fidel Castro, you know, they were just, there seemed to be this kind of weird euphoria among leftists. Castro, Mao Zedong, oh, there's just some kind of really weird worship that they do of these totalitarian dictators.
Yeah.
And throughout the years, I began to notice it's not just, you know, the popular version is that they're just naive, useful idiots. No. There's a malice there. And yeah. these people get excited when the killing escalates.
Yes.
Okay? And so a lot of people don't want to look at this particular theater in that respect. But I began to see this, that there was some kind of living vicariously through these despots and their mass murder. And, you know, following this, working on it. And then 9/11 happened. And I noticed, you know, a whole bunch of leftists in my community, they were very depressed after the fall of the Soviet regime. They were walking around kicking rocks on the ground, and they were kind of in despair. They lost their sense of purpose. But then 9/11 happened, ground zero. Oh, Mark, you should have seen the sparkle in their eye. They came back to life. Oh, the poor, the oppressed, and the downtrodden have come back. We're fighting for them. And they were so excited with ground zero. It just gave them all this life. And I remember being really weirded out about it. Even though I knew that that was going to happen, it's normal. It's still very haunting to observe it. And then Bush sent the troops over to Iraq and Afghanistan. And I remember I was watching some demonstrations against that. And there was one particular demonstration where there was this barely clothed woman, and she was almost naked, and she's at this demonstration just screaming, Allahu Akbar, walking right next to an Islamist mufti or something. And I was thinking, this woman would be executed within 20 seconds if she was under his power in a certain country. And I decided that I had to write a book. And I apologize that it takes me 5 hours just to answer a simple question. But that's the context. And I began to write a book to explain this flirtation, the left's flirtation with these monsters. So what United in Hate did and does is it gives the history of the fellow travelers and political pilgrims. Those are the people that travel to the communist killing fields to get on their knees and bow in front of it and worship. I showed the history of the fellow travelers with communism. And then after 9/11, I showed the history of the fellow travelers of this new romance with jihad. And a couple years ago, I realized, Jamie, this is a buried treasure in terms of everything going on, in terms of October 7th. I mean, when October 7th happened, I just knew, oh, there's going to be, you know, because a normal person would think, oh, October 7th, let me see. Oh, people will understand what anti-Semitism is and start supporting the Jewish people. Of course not. When you're dealing with the left, and I immediately knew, oh, the Jewish innocent people are being raped and mutilated and tied to trees and raped. The left is going to escalate with Jew hatred now. It just makes complete sense once you understand what the left is. So I realized I got to put a revised and updated version together, which I did. And the updated revised version includes the romance with Hamas. But now it's more relevant than ever because we see the left just sobbing that Trump is killing mullahs that are mass murdering Iranian people. So the left is in a great depression right now.
Jamie, the scholar of Islam, Bernard Lewis, once said that when he worked in British intelligence during World War II, he said, we knew who we were. We knew who the enemy was. We knew the dangers and the issues. But today, he says, we don't know who we are. We don't know the issues. And we still do not understand the nature of the enemy. Why is there still such willful blindness about Islam and the left, especially among the elites in our government and in all of our cultural institutions?
Well, what a great question, Mark. Yes, the willful blindness. And Sun Tzu warned us that we have to know our enemy.
Yeah.
And if we're going to win a war, we have to make a threat assessment, right?
Yes.
But how can you make a threat assessment if the people advising you are the enemies? Stephen Coughlin, in his book Catastrophic Failure, has documented that the Muslim Brotherhood is in the White House, and they, for years, are actually the ones through their proxies and front groups. They're the ones advising our officials and our presidents.
Yeah.
Except maybe Trump, thank God. But believe me, even though Trump, and we love him, trust me, he hasn't been able to eradicate everything that's in those institutions around him. Yeah. But I would say Kenneth Levin, what a powerful work he did. It's called the Oslo Syndrome. And he shows what people under siege, what many of them need to believe and begin to believe. Because during Oslo and throughout Oslo, it was beyond reasonable doubt that the people you are dealing with want to kill you.
Yeah.
But yet, many of the leftist Jews, you know, there's many layers here. Some are obviously, many are just malicious. But there's other ones that are like, oh, just a couple hugs. A couple more hugs is going to solve this. Just a little bit more money. Just a little bit more money. Oh, let's just give them this land over here. And they'll forget about that book that they're reading. And that's not going to happen. But Mark, people, most people need to believe in fairy tales. And many people, maybe, okay, whatever, most or many, we're just dealing with a huge number of human beings that need to feel that they are in control. And, you know, I have many people that just don't want anything to do with me anymore in the sense of politics, because you see, when I talk, they lose a sense of control. They want to believe that they can solve these things. They can't handle the emotional. They have such emotional incapacity. You see, because Mark, if we accept what Islam really is, we got a big problem on our hands, don't we? And there are people who just want to get through the day and believe that everything will be okay. And guess what's easier to believe? Oh, Islam is beautiful. I have this great Muslim neighbor across the street. It's just these extremists that read a bad translation of the Quran. And then that way they can get through the day. But the truth is much more difficult to accept. And if we have to accept what Ronald Reagan said, that every generation has to shed blood in order to maintain liberty. And by the way, just in terms of how we're always slandered and libeled, I'm not saying we need to go out and engage in violence. There's a metaphorical meaning here that there has to be a sacrifice constantly because freedom is not a natural state. We have to be in battle to defend freedom. Again, maybe too long of a tirade to answer your question, but there's a hell of a lot of denial, and there's a tendency in many people not to see the truth and the sacrifice it takes to defend our freedom. There's a reluctance to see the true nature of the enemy. And then scariest of all, we have been infiltrated and penetrated by those who want to harm us, that are in the top levels of our media, academia, and government, and have shut our mouth and not allowing us to talk anymore.
And speaking of denial, these two partners in terror, Islam and the left, they're united against the West, but they have differing visions about the utopias that they want to establish, right? And why, in other words, for Islam, it's a global caliphate, and for the left, it's this social justice utopia. Why does the left not realize that once victory over the West has been achieved, there will be no place for them in an Islamic caliphate?
My quick answer to that is that they do understand that, and they do want to be killed, and they do want to die. And that's what many, many people do not want to accept. But let me just backtrack for a minute, because you are very correct as well. Both truths exist parallel-wise. So you are not incorrect in what you said, because there are several dimensions here. There are always just useful, dumb idiots.
Yes.
Absolutely. But let us not blind ourselves to the real roots, because Mark, what you say is brilliantly true and undeniable. Who were the first people up against the wall when the Bolsheviks took power? The Russian liberals who supported their way into power. Who were the first people up against the wall who supported Khomeini? The leftist Iranians who supported Khomeini, the first ones up against the wall. But Mark, if this is happening over and over and over and over again, there must be something there. It can't just be this wide-eyed naivete, right?
Yeah.
And so, yes, at first glance, it looks like they're different, but they share a lot in common. The hatred of freedom, the hatred of the individual, the hatred of the Judeo-Christian tradition, the hatred of our Father in heaven, the belief that we can get back to Eden on our own. And so I would stress this, Mark, that when you begin to study the left, just think about the suicide by cop individual that goes out into the street and is engaged in suicide by cop. You got to ask yourself, what if that became an entire national movement? You got to ask yourself, just the period that we just came out of where they were trying to put certain potions into our body. And we know that there were a lot of people standing in line, and then the person in the front goes and gets it, and then he just passes out and falls down, and they bring a stretcher and start carrying him out, and the people stay in the line. This is the leftist movement. And a lot of people in that line are just scared. They're scared to lose their friends. They like the way that they see themselves. But there are some people in that line that might not want to live anymore. They might not even know it completely themselves. But there is a death wish in the left. And once somebody begins to understand this, you see, just very quickly, I would just say, okay, just even to begin with radical son, David Horowitz, in his memoir, he talks about a friend of his, this lady who was a leftist, and there was a rapist in the neighborhood, and he was described by certain witnesses and victims as a black person. And she refused to lock her back door or her front door because she wasn't going to be racist. Yeah. That's an idea, right, Mark? That's a belief system, right? I'm not going to give the spoiler alert, but people can guess what ended up happening to her. Not only was she raped, she was killed. And you got to ask yourself, did she sacrifice her life for a certain idea? And this is the left. And so when you got to ask yourself, why would you open up a border? And ISIS is coming in, Al-Qaeda is coming in, Boko Haram is coming in, Chinese nationals and spies, cartel, rapists, murderers. Why would you do that? And so United in Hate shows that there's also a death wish in the heart of the left. And so when these left-wing feminists travel to Palestinian territories, as I've documented, and they go there to scream Allahu Akbar and ally themselves with the anti-Israeli cause, and they're going to fight alongside the Palestinians, and all of a sudden they start getting raped and brutalized. And then they even cover up what's happening to them.
Right.
Very dark movement, Mark, but I'd like to stress that it's not just idiotic and naive. Mm-hmm. When you hate man for who and what he is, you see, the left believes that it can mold the human being like clay. The left believes that it can create a utopia on earth without God. You just need to remold humans and cause ground zero. Well, every time they try that, they create hell. They just can't mold the new Soviet man properly, and so they hate man for who and what he is. But guess what? If you hate man for who and what he is, what happens when you look in the mirror? And then when you look in the mirror, what are some conclusions you start to reach? It's very much connected to Islamic suicide bombers that ultimately just want a way out.
Yeah, I think it is a form of martyrdom for the left. And I think you're totally right about them having a death wish. What concerns me most about this unholy alliance, as David Horowitz put it, is they both seem to have a sort of a tribal triumphalism about them. They have a self-assurance in their mission, while we in the West seem to have had our civilizational confidence sapped out of us over the decades by left-wing indoctrination, wouldn't you say?
That is so correct. Could you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, it's just that, you know, the left and Islam, they seem to feel like they have the momentum. They feel like their mission is just and right, and they're completely confident that no matter how long it takes, I mean, because they always play the long game. And they think that no matter how long it takes, they are assured victory, and that one day, at least for Muslims, you know, for one day the Islamic Caliphate will be a global phenomenon. And the left thinks, well, one day we can establish our social justice utopia on Earth. And conversely, in the West, we seem to have developed this kind of self-loathing, self-doubt, and that's suicide for a civilization.
You are so correct, Mark, and that's a book to write right there. That's the central issue here, but you are so right that, you see, because of what I would begin with this, because of what's so good about us, is why there's also a second guessing and reluctance. Mm-hmm. And you see, the demons, they already know what they want to do, and they're not hampered by conscience.
Yes.
Right? And so when you look at the Israeli boys and girls that go door to door instead of just carpet bombing, the Israelis and the foundation of their army on the Torah and on respect for life and human dignity. They go door to door in so many cases when they can, and they sacrifice their own boys and girls to try to avoid taking innocent life. And why does Hamas have human shields? Well, because right. It knows that the Israelis value human life. But because, and I'm just giving that one example, because in our civilization, we worry about right and wrong. And we want to be civilized. And there's a Judeo-Christian tradition there. And we're also worried about our salvation. And when there's Christian tenets and Jewish tenets, there's a concept of shame. And there's also a concept of mea culpa and a seeking of repentance with our Lord and Savior. You see, we're hampered by a lot of these things, right?
Yes.
And I would begin with that. Whereas demons, which is communism and jihad and the left, they, when a rapist needs to go and wants to go into a building just to rape a woman, he ain't worried about too many things, right?
Yeah.
But the people who want to defend that woman, they need to build a society of fairness. And so they're worried about how can we have a safe building here, but at the same time allow human beings to come in and not be so judgmental. So it's so tough for people that want to run a fair society. But there's definitely a suicidal impulse in our civilization, as you say, because we're not sure of ourselves, and it's because the left is always putting the whispered doubts into our ears about how immoral we are.
The West has definitely invited these existential enemies inside the gates now. When you look around at America today, do you see evidence that this alliance has made advances and that they're gathering momentum?
Oh, absolutely. And it's scary. I mean, thank God for Donald Trump. We're getting a brief reprieve. But what was happening under Biden? I mean, when I talk about just my own narrative of growing up and, you know, yes, there was maybe a crazy professor here or there, but these people are in power now.
Yeah.
And with that last administration, you just simply just open up a border. And the surrender to Islam that's happening. When you look at Mamdani and you look at even the recent, I mean, Europe's gone, but when you just look at how these followers of Sharia in masses are out on the streets bowing and then screaming Allahu Akbar, this is serious.
Yeah.
And we're already seeing the taking over. And we even whisper one word about this and then we're labeled Islamophobics. And
right.
So when... Well, thank you so much for mentioning my book, Jihad is Psychopath, my other book. But see, I've studied psychopaths my whole life, and one of their favorite, they've got a lot of tactics, but one of their favorite tactics is the cry bully tactic. So they mm-hmm. punch you in the face, and then they start crying and whimpering, and you have to apologize. You see, I started to see that what the psychopaths do to their victims is exactly what Islam is doing to the West. And so that's what's happening now. That you'll see a jihadist attack on our streets, And then within 24 hours, we're apologizing for being Islamophobic. It's completely bizarre, but they are winning in this context.
Yeah, you already touched on the fact that you have a new chapter about the October 7 attacks in Israel. Were you, and I suspect you were not, but were you surprised by the response of the left to the absolute savagery that Hamas wreaked on innocent Israelis on that date? I bet you weren't surprised by that.
Exactly, Mark. So look, I always want to just try to come off a little bit. I don't want to pretend, oh, I'm all knowing. I'm a human being. We're all human beings. So of course, there's somewhere in my human heart and as a human being that we're sometimes, no matter how much we know, we're a bit surprised and shocked by things. So yeah. Absolutely. But having said that, in terms of my mind and in terms of my knowledge and everything that I've studied, it's completely logical and completely to be expected. And people need to, David Horowitz was always stressing, stop being nice.
Right.
Stop, his main criticism of conservatives was you don't know how to fight war. And he was always explaining conservatives think that they're just like us. We just disagree about the place. No, they hate you. Yep. And so people have to understand these are demons. The left is led by a very malicious and, yes, demonic ideology. And these are people who live vicariously through the pain and suffering and torture that the totalitarians inflict on people throughout the world. And they actually support this. And so you begin, a lot of people don't want to expect this, but, you got to ask yourself, if you're supporting Fidel Castro, there might be a reason why you are supporting what he does to dissidents. And if you're supporting people who throw acid in women's faces, it might not just be because you're naive. It might be because you're supporting that being done to women. So there's a lot of hatred in the heart of the left. And there's a Jew hatred and anti-Semitism that's very powerful. And they flew into euphoria when October 7th happened. Mom Donnie's wife is no surprise, believe me. And we're seeing it right now in terms of what's happening in Iran. And absolutely, David Potter, even though he didn't use the same political arguments, he's a historian that wrote about something called negative identification. It's when you identify with a political movement or other kind of tribalistic movement, but not for positive reasons. And so there's people who they have this impulse towards power, but because they can't exert it in their own life, they begin to identify with totalitarian movements abroad.
Interesting. Speaking of fighting back, as David Horowitz was always encouraging us to do, what can the average citizen do to push back against these existential enemies of freedom?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it, Mark? Because a lot of people just end up feeling hopeless. And what do you just go and start arguing at the corner store? One thing that I've always been irritated by conservatives is a lot of them, throughout the years, there's always a little bit of this thing where, Jamie's kind of weird. And I don't mean that I might just not be a weird person. I'm not trying to defend myself here, but I might be weird, they're referring to what I do. They're referring to the David Horowitz. But they're having their barbecue and they're just living their lives. I'm not against barbecues. You get my point here. This is what David Horowitz was saying. And the typical conservative is having his barbecue. And you don't know how many people have said this to me. Oh, if that jihadist comes to my front doorstep, I'll just shoot him dead. And I can't stand that guy. Because my first thing that I want to say is, why don't you get involved so the jihadist isn't here in the first place?
Right.
So that's my answer, Mark. Get involved. It could be in the littlest way. It could be a little community. It could be a little group. But the key is to start. I would start with this. Have courage. And stop Yes. being afraid of being called. Just even to start with, stop being afraid that of what you're going to be called, that you like Donald Trump. Stop being afraid that you might have a criticism of Islam or of abortion. Stop being afraid of the names that leftists are going to call you. Stop being afraid of the friends and community that you're going to lose. Start getting involved in little ways. Start being courageous and speaking. Join a little group or join a big group. Start speaking. But most importantly, if you can't do something, whether maybe it's a little bit that's out of your bank or out of your pocket, or maybe a little bit of other ways that you can support, support Mark Tapson's podcast. Support Karen Siegemann at the American Freedom Alliance. Support the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Support
and the Glazov Gang.
The Glazov Gang. Support the Charlie Kirk. Well, God bless his soul. But there's many Charlie Kirks. Well, he was exceptional. But there's many sure. people aspiring to be like him. Support the people on the front lines that are doing something.
That is all great advice. Jamie, are you working on anything new at the moment?
Apart from trying to get some rest. Thank you, Mark. Absolutely. Well, can we talk about even your little project that you were engaged in? Or is that a little bit of a, we're keeping our cards close to our chest?
No, that's fine. We can. Yeah, I think you're referring to the anthology that I'm putting together, which I've titled Holy Alliance.
Yes.
About Christians and Jews united to defend the West. And you were one of the contributors, I'm happy to say. So that is something you have contributed to and worked on. I'm very grateful for that.
Thank you. And I'm grateful that you invited me that. I think that's crucial to say. So that's something that I was working on. And I think that's really appropriate to bring up right now, because you're asking, what do we do? And what am I doing? Well, that's something that I contributed to, and thank you so much for letting me come aboard, because you see, our enemies are united in hate.
Yes.
They have an unholy alliance, and we need to be united in love, and we need to try to have a holy alliance, not because we're holy, we're fallen, but we can Sure. try to attach ourselves to something holy. And so our theme is, if Christians and Jews are the biggest victims of the totalitarian forces right now, let's stop arguing amongst ourselves. Let's unite. We need to build bigger bridges between Jews and Christians, amplify what we love in the world and about each other. We have the same roots and foundations, and build a holy alliance against the unholy alliance. So that was wonderful to work with. And I've got a couple other things up my sleeve a little bit at the moment. But every day I'm working at frontpagemag.com. And there's a great guy named Mark Tapson that has a great feature lead up there right now. And Mark Tapson is a great Shulman Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. It's great to have you at Front Page. Mark, we've got Robert Spencer, we've got Daniel Greenfield, we've got Christine Williams, Bruce Bauer, Bruce Thornton, so many home run hitters fighting for freedom, and it's great to have them.
Well, I'm blessed to be there, and I've been blessed for many years to work with you, Jamie. You were always very good to me from the very beginning when I just began submitting articles. Jamie, what about social media? How can people keep up with your takes on things there?
Before I go in that direction, Mark, let's make sure to mention somebody. Look, David just passed away. God bless his soul. He was our general. We're really trying to continue his legacy, and it's not easy. And we got to keep going, and we got to mention that there's a great man by the name of Michael Finch that's held the center together all these years on so many levels, and he is doing that right now. So let's a big shout out to Michael Finch. And yes. He's got a great new book out there right now called A Time to Stand. and you wrote a great introduction in that book to one of his sections. Thank you, Mark. People can find me at Jamie Glazoff on Facebook, on Instagram, and on X. And go to, come to frontpagemag.com. But I also have this little humble little site, jamieglazoff.com, where you can check out what I'm doing, and especially our show, The Glazoff Gang. And Robert Spencer is going to be a big guest there tomorrow night, so make sure to come check us out.
Awesome. Well, Robert is a great guest. Good to know. Jamie Glazoff, thanks for the invaluable work that you are doing, brother. Keep it up, and thanks for coming to The Right Take.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Mark. I really appreciate it. And it's tough out there because we're marginalized so badly in this culture, you know? So I really appreciate any terrain where people invite me to talk. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you on. Listeners, get Jamie's book, United in Hate, The Left's Romance with Tyranny, Terror, and Hamas. It really is an essential work for understanding this unholy alliance of the West's enemies. And thank you for tuning in. As always, don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take if you haven't already. And if you like what you hear, please leave that positive review. Be seeing you.